This is the Employment Law Show.
And welcome to it. We are set to go. It is Thursday. It's John Scholes. Stan Fainsilberg is back again this week. You want to reach out now and talk to us over the course of the next half hour. You have questions about your workplace, maybe something you've always wanted to ask. This is the time in the show to do it, right? Get it done. 416-870-6400 to get on air with us. 416-870-6400. We invite you to many open lines and lots of time, so bring it on. If you want to reach out after the show to Stan and his team, that's always an option for you. 1-855-821-5900. And the email address, always, is help@employmentlawyer.ca. Help@employmentlawyer.ca. Going to dive into the email bag tonight for sure. We got a lot of these stacking up, so we're going to work our way through some of those, Stan, but you always start off with the case of the day, pal. What's going on with you?
Absolutely. Well, John, I want to talk about a case I came across recently where, you know, we often talk to our listeners about this concept of cause and how difficult of a standard is, but a concept that's a little bit less known but comes up occasionally in the case law is this idea of an after-acquired cause. You know, basically the idea that during the course of litigation, after somebody's been terminated, the company discovers something that had they known it at the time, they would have taken the position that that amounted to cause and essentially used that defense going forward. So in this particular case, John, it was a bank employee who had been with the bank for about 26 years. She was terminated without cause at the beginning. You know, they had a disagreement in terms of the severance. She got a lawyer involved. They ended up suing. And during one of the steps in a lawsuit called examinations, where basically the other side's lawyer gets to sit the plaintiff down and ask them any questions about the lawsuit, this particular plaintiff revealed for the first time that she had serendipitously taken thousands and thousands of emails and files on a USB from a bank home and just stored it in her home. Now, the reason wasn't not entirely clear. She had some personal interpersonal issues going on and, you know, didn't trust her managers and things like that. But basically, she copied a bunch of files with very sensitive information, John. And we're talking about personal identification information like SIN numbers, addresses, phone numbers. And she put that on a USB and just stored it away, never used it, never actually looked at it again. But once this came out during her examination, the bank, you know, made her produce that USB and then amended its defense to now argue that they didn't owe her money at all. Because, in fact, had they known she had done this before they let her go, they would have argued that they had the right to fire her for cause.
Right.
And the judge, of course, allowed this defense because they could, in this particular instance, the bank could prove, and this is the key, that they had absolutely no idea about this. Because had they had some idea or had they known about this and not taken the position that was caused at the time, you can't later rely upon it. That's condemnation. So despite allowing the bank to forward or go ahead with this defense, even in this scenario, even with the sensitive information we're talking about, and even with a bank, that still didn't amount to cause. The judge noted a number of reasons why the plaintiff had mitigating factors, essentially. So certain things like the fact that she'd been there for 26 years, the fact that she'd never actually used this information, she had, and it was all information that she had access to, so she didn't clandestinely access it, and the fact that she didn't disclose it to anyone or show it to anyone else. And, you know, on a human note, the fact that she was on a personal level going through very difficult personal time. She was having a family situation, going through a divorce, and ultimately the judge said that all of this amounted to just a lapse of judgment, not necessarily something that's gives the bank the right to terminate a 26-year employee for cause.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think it makes sense when you really look at the details. And, you know, as I always say here, the facts when we're talking about employment law are critical. Every case turns on its own set of facts. And, you know, if this employee came off very well, or if she came off very sympathetically, if she, you know, talking about her personal circumstances, and again, in a 26-year career, to make one lapse of judgment, even a serious lapse of judgment like this, it's very hard to establish that that's something that, that ruins the employment relationship completely. I mean, if she was committing fraud, you know, fraud is fraud. That's malicious. That's intentional. Here, was she doing this specifically to, you know, with the intention of losing her job or with the thought that she might lose her job? It's pretty unlikely, I would say.
Yeah. Good call, pal. It's a good way to open the show. We're going to take a short little break right now, the one and only one for the show, to let you regroup. And then we return with your emails right here on the Employment Law Show, the Thursday night edition on 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to the Employment Law Show.
Stan Fanselberg is a lawyer here tonight, and you can always reach him after the show at that same email address, of course, and then the number 1-855-821-5900. Here we go. Ryan is up first. Says, guys, it was told in December that the company made bonus and we would be paid our usual bonus in March. However, I was just let go and they're refusing to pay me that bonus. Do they have to give me the bonus if I work the entire year for the company? What do you think, Stan?
Well, I would say at this point, they almost guaranteed have to. I can't see a way around it, because if it's due in March, you know, regardless of how many years Ryan's been there, his statutory notice period basically takes him to the end of March.
Right.
And you can't change any terms during the statutory notice period. And if he's owed a bonus and it falls within that date, then he's absolutely, no matter what, even any contract, basically what kind of language it has, he's owed that bonus. In another circumstances, though, we have to look essentially at the contract, because if it does have certain language in it that limits a person's entitlements, essentially stating something like you only get the bonus on if you're employed on the date of payout, and the date of payout has to encompass your statutory notice period and you're not employed and you're not considered employed during the common law. If you have really exacting language like that, which, you know, is incredibly rare, I can tell you, then theoretically, Ryan may not be owed the bonus. But when you work an entire year and basically the bonus is coming due in the next few weeks, it's almost guaranteed that he's owed that.
Let, you know, expand on that for a sec. So someone's let go, say they're owed, for your sake of argument, 12-month severance. Okay, so from now for 12 months, so next March is when that severance is going to run for them. Sometime during June, they usually get a bonus, and the work has been done already. It doesn't get paid out till June. Because it's within their statutory, not statutory time, but common law time, will they still get the bonus?
So again, it depends on the contract. If it has language that limits the bonus entitlement to the statutory period only, then, you know, unfortunately not. But the general idea is that absent that language, you're entitled to your entire form of compensation, all forms of compensation, including bonus, during the common law period. So if it falls within the common law period, then you're presumptively entitled to it unless the company can prove otherwise.
All righty, moving on to Thomas. Again, the email address, help@employmentlawyer.ca, or to interrupt us on air here, would prefer that, right? 416-870-6400. Thomas says, I had an argument with my boss because he refuses to pay us during our lunch break. Is he allowed to do that? That is not pay.
Yeah. Well, Thomas, under the Employment Standards Act, what you're entitled to is a unpaid 30-minute break for every 5 hours worked. So most people work 8-hour days. That's why they end up getting a 1-hour lunch break or two, you know, 30-minute lunch break and two breaks. But, you know, the key is that it is allowed to be unpaid. Most of the time for people who are salary, it's just already built into their salary. But if you're an hourly employee and your boss is saying, well, you have to take an unpaid lunch, then unfortunately, Thomas, he's right.
Again, Thomas, any further questions outside the half hour of the show, you can do so. Call Stan and his team, 1-855-821-5900. Let's roll down to Jane. Says, guys, my manager has made numerous inappropriate sexual comments to me. I've told him to stop, and he talked to HR about it, but he is the owner's brother, and they haven't done anything. What can I do at this point?
Well, that's terrible to hear, Jane. There's a lot of options you have at this point. You could speak to the ministry about an investigation. You can go to the Human Rights Tribunal and claim discrimination on the basis of sex or sexual harassment. You can call it a constructive dismissal in a toxic work environment and remove yourself from that situation and basically fight for your severance. You can also, if you have disability benefits, talk to your doctor about going on short-term disability and immediately removing yourself from that situation if your doctor recommends that. So don't think that you're trapped by it by any means. You have many options here, and you should give us a call to discuss them.
Yeah, that 15, 20 years ago, it may have been, come on, boys will be boys type of thing. But that stuff is, it's very, as it should be, very much frowned upon, taken seriously from the get-go now. You just shouldn't do and can't get away with that behavior anymore, can you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a new world, and there's just no place in it for inappropriate sexual comments or harassment like that, especially in the workplace. Everybody deserves to feel, safe in their workplace, and that's just the law. It's pretty black and white in that sense.
I mean, going forward, for Jane's sake, if she decides to make, one more chance to talk to the HR people, who's, the owner's brother, I think she said, or the manager, blah, 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 it might be a fruitless endeavor. But should she be, if she hasn't already been writing everything down, emails back and forth, so she has permanent record of what's been going on? It's always helpful, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, you're thinking like a lawyer, John, because the hardest part about cases like this is proving what actually happened. So often there is no record of anything. It's all just oral comments, phone calls, meetings, what have you. Only no witnesses even, right? Usually it's just two people with one saying the other person was inappropriate to them in a sexual way. And obviously you have the person's credibility and they should be believed. But, in a lawsuit, people poke holes in people's credibility every day. That's what lawyers are paid to do. And sometimes, the most important key really in law is that the truth is whatever the judge says it is at the end of the day. And that's unfortunate. And sometimes judges get it wrong because they're people. But that's just the reality. And that's why, as you say, John, if you've got to document these things, you've got to get text messages. If you need to, you can record the conversation.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that. Take it to another level. Yeah. She can do that if it's her involved in the conversation, yeah?
Exactly. In the province of Ontario, only one person to the conversation needs to consent. And if you are one of those people on the conversation and you obviously consent, then you are allowed to record that phone call.
That could be nail in the coffin right there, Jane. So all those pieces of advice, heed them for sure if you're going to deal with this thing. And if not, go right to Stan and clear it up that way. Trevor's up next. It's Guys Love the Show. Question, what is the most severance that I can get if I'm terminated? Wow, it's a broad question, but that's okay.
Broad question. And I guess the easiest way to answer that is to go visit the Pocket Employment Lawyer and check out the severance pay calculator. And enter just a few clicks and a few factors, and it'll spit out the answer. But the factors, Trevor, are basically your age, your position, your length of employment, and any additional circumstances you may have that are barriers to your reemployment. So somewhere between 1 month and 24 months is the best I can tell you without knowing those particular factors.
Yeah, if Trevor had included a little more detail in the email, you could have done it on the fly, because I know you can do that, Trevor. But yeah, or you can do that, Stan. But Trevor, yeah, go to pocketemploymentlawyer.ca, look for the severance calculator on the website. It's free, it's anonymous. Or call us. You got a few minutes to do that. How about that? You can call us here at 416-870-6400. Kathy Joe, coming up, guys. My employer is trying to make me sign a contract for the first time in 20 years. They're saying if I don't, they will fire me. And I am really scared, and I don't know what to do now.
Well, I mean, that's a clear scare tactic in terms of telling you that you will be fired. I wouldn't necessarily take that at face value. I've seen lots of employers use that tactic to try to get employees to sign illegal contracts or even legal contracts. Because, Kathy Jo, the most important thing you have to know here is, number one, you don't have to sign anything. And number two, unless they give you something in exchange for that contract, it's not going to be binding anyway. So, you don't have to sign it. But at the same time, could they fire you if you choose not to? At the end of the day, that's what we mean by without cause terminations. An employer can basically terminate you for almost any reason, as long as the reason's not discriminatory or reprisal, and as long as they give you a fair severance.
So if Kathy Joe's boss, or at least employer, said at this point, we need you to sign this contract, and they are offering some sort of consideration, a $500 bonus, at that point, is she bound to sign it? Because she can still say, no, I'm not interested in the $500 or the contract. Thank you very much.
No, absolutely no requirement or obligation to sign that at all, John. The reality is that she's already has a contract. Whether it's written, whether it's oral, whether it's implied, you know, that could be depending on the circumstances. But if she's working for somebody, there is already some form of contract, and she can choose to say, I prefer to keep the contract that we have in place now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there might be a couple little treats in there for, but we always say on the show, Stan, I know you'll reiterate that, you know, often when it's mid-employment, like in Kathy Jo's situation, and a contract is put on your desk, it's definitely for the benefit of the employer. They've talked to somebody or talked to a lawyer or they've been told, yeah, you better get these people in line before we got a problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's usually where the employer has maybe gotten a letter from somebody like myself, and they've just realized that their old contracts aren't really worth the paper they're drafted on, and they've spoken to a lawyer about getting something better because they paid a whole lot of money to a terminated employee they probably didn't expect or want to pay.
Yeah,
that's usually the circumstances in which a new employment contract just all of a sudden happens to fall on an employee's lap.
Again, you got some time here, a few minutes to go, so you can interrupt us on air for sure. 416-870-6400, or we'll keep whipping through these email. Next one will be Tanya. Tanya says, guys, my employer terminated overtime pay, made us, the employees, sign something before OT pay had stopped. My question is that legal?
Realistically, Tanya, you know, and it's a broad question, but very likely not. I mean, if you are an employee who qualifies for overtime pay and you work anything above 44 hours a week, whether your employer has a policy that says you have to get approval, whether there's a policy that says we don't pay overtime, whatever policies, quote unquote, they have, it doesn't matter because the ESA very clearly provides that you do get overtime pay. And so regardless of what they're telling you, you know, they're very likely, whatever they're saying is illegal, you are entitled to time and a half for any hours that you work above 44 hours in a week.
Let's take it one step further. Say, you know, that maybe they've told all employees, no, we don't pay overtime, don't work overtime. But to get the job done, you had to go against their wishes and work the overtime to get the job done. It just, you had no choice. You still get paid for it and you can't be let go for it. Well, can't be let go with cause for it, can you?
Well, I mean, I think you're both on right, or correct on both fronts, John. But you can't be let go at all, I would say, because if they did let you go because you claimed overtime, legitimate overtime, that's a reprisal under the ESA, and you could be reinstated for that. And absolutely, you're still owed the overtime because, look, if somebody gives you 60 hours of work to do and says do it in 40 hours, that's not reasonable. And if it's legitimately going to take somebody the 60 hours, and there's case law, you know, that's proven this, where employers like banks have had policies saying you have to get sign off from managers, but, you know, the employees can show that, hey, my manager is sending me emails at 8 o'clock saying get back to me in an hour or whatever. Yeah. And they're working all day. They're logging on at nights, and they have the records. You know, you can piece this together to show how many hours you're actually working. And if it's above the 44, then regardless of the policy, again, you're owed overtime pay.
That's a really good point. Is if you're in the habit, or if you have the type of job where overtime is quite common, and if you've run into some rough waters with getting it paid or arguments with the management, it's always good to keep if you can, at the end of the day when you go home, have some sort of ledger you can keep and keep pretty detailed documents of the overtime you've worked. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to, John, where they got terminated. We're just talking about their package, talking about their options. And they casually just say, oh, well, I've been working 6 days a week for the last 5 years.
Right.
Or I've been putting in 50 to 60 hours a week for the last 10 years. And all of a sudden they want to go after their overtime pay. And that's great. But the obvious question is, how do you prove it? And so many of them don't have those emails or aren't working the desk jobs or aren't doing, you know, don't have a punch clock in and out. So if you know, it never hurts to keep these records, an Excel spreadsheet. At the end of the day, if you're making contemporaneous records, even if they're your own notes, and obviously, you know, everyone's going to question how truthful they are. But if you can prove they're contemporaneous, and, you know, with technology and metadata these days, you can prove that very easily. No one's going to question your credibility is going to be questioned a lot less if you can show you've been making these records for the last 5 years.
Yeah, you got it. We got time to get Joe on the line here for a quick call. Joe, how are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, sir. What's your question?
Question is, do I get any severance? I worked in this building management for 21 years under different contractors for one financial institution. Now, they're going to sell the building, and I'm a technician. Do I go with the new owners of the building? What if they don't want me? Or let's say that present company, which the contract expires next year, am I owed any severance?
Good question. Yep.
Yeah. So, Joe, you mentioned that you work in a building, and you said that there have been changes to the property management companies, and you've consistently stayed with the same building, correct?
Correct.
Okay. You would fall under what's called the Building Services Provisions of the Employment Standards Act. This is actually a situation that comes up often, so often that the act literally deals with it, and it sets out exactly what happens. If the new company coming in owes you a severance if they choose not to keep you. If they want to keep you, they have that right, obviously, and you have the choice if you want to stay, and your years of service carry over from your previous employers.
We had to let Joe go because we're just about out of time, but I thought I saw on the call screener there, it's 21 years, he's 75 years old, so that off the top of your head, Stan, that would be a very decent severance package if they decided not to continue his employment, right?
You know, I think it's fair to say that Joe is likely not going to find new employment at that age in this world. And, you know, anything from 24 months, even plus, those are exceptional circumstances in my mind. So that's all available to a person with those type of factors.
Joe, we hope that answered the question. Thank you for the final call and final bit of information for the night. Well done. You want to reach out to Stan if that ever happens, if you think it's coming down the pike, if your spidey sense is tingling, right? Here's the number for you, Joe. And if you've been listening as well, here's how you get a hold of Stan, 1-855-821-5900, help@employmentlawyer.ca. And again, one more time, that website that contains the severance calculator, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. We'll catch you in the weekend right here on the Employment Law Show on 640 Toronto.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.